Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce cost and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. Head to netsuite.com/strange right now. netsuite.com/strange. netsuite.com/strange. Strangers, just a note at the top. There is a very brief mention of possible violence towards pets in this episode, so listener discretion may be advised. I'm Laura Norton, and this is One Strange Thing, the show where we search the nation's news archives for stories that can't quite be explained. Strangers, it wasn't so long ago that we told you about the spate of Bigfoot sightings that crisscrossed the Appalachians, the Ozarks, and various points in the Midwest, stories that popped up back in the 1970s. We touched on many of those tales, on the absolute Bigfoot frenzy of that decade, in our premium episode covering the Spotsville Monster. But we must confess, there was one that we skipped over. Because, really, it deserves its own episode. This creature, known variously as The Thing, The Missouri Monster, or Momo for short, had the town of Louisiana, Missouri, in its apparently stinky grip throughout the summer of 1972. According to its official website, Louisiana, Missouri is a little town in the northeast portion of the state, in Pike County. It's just over an hour north of St. Louis. In 1970, its population was less than 5,000, and the area was, and still is in fact, best known for its historic architecture and its, quote, oak and hardwood forests. Well, that and the cryptid. We suppose that those plentiful forests, they would be a good hiding place for the monster, one that the Springfield Leader and Press described as, quote, a giant hairy biped with a large pumpkin-shaped head, glowing orange eyes, an ape-like growth of hair, large feet, clawed hands, and arms that reach to the knee, plus a sulfur-like odor. Its height was estimated between 6 and 12 feet. And that description, it's been generally agreed upon, except for the eyes. Many witnesses actually claim that Momo had no eyes at all, or at least none that could be seen through all that hair. Witnesses generally did not stop to perform a thorough examination. Now, we told you that most stories of Momo cropped up in 1972. And that's true, at least if we're going by presence in popular media. It's when the local and national news ran their columns, and when hunters and Bigfoot enthusiasts descended on the town. But there were actually sightings in 1971 and in 1972. We know of one of those because of two women, Mary Ryan and Joan Mill, who've told their story of their 1971 encounter many times. And the cryptid enthusiast and author Lyle Blackburn, who wrote an entire book on the Momo affair, was able to track down two other very minor sightings, one in the summer of 1970 and another just after Marion Jones. He found a few reports of a monster in the Louisiana area in July of 1970 and two in July of 1971, and then the major events of July of 1972. As an aside, apparently July is the month with the second highest number of Bigfoot sightings nationwide. Some Sasquatch enthusiasts posit that they're out foraging for berries, We certainly can't say what Bigfoots like to do with their summer vacations, but what's more interesting to us is that in the area of Louisiana, Missouri, there is evidence of 3 years of reports in the same area, each coming at precisely the same time of year, in July, as if there was a cycle to it. According to Lyle Blackburn's research, the sightings carried on a bit longer in 1972 and became spotty afterward. But for that cycle of years, it was like clockwork. We can't truly speculate as to why July was key. Berries? Who knows? It would be one thing if all the sightings came from the same people, or if all the sightings came from locals. But they weren't. In fact, Joan Mill and Mary Ryan, who had the 1971 encounter, they were just passing through. So, about that 1971 sighting. According to the Missouri Folklore Society, Joan Mill and Mary Ryan had been heading on Highway 79 towards St. Louis, but they'd stopped near Louisiana, Missouri. It was a lovely rural area, and they decided to stop and eat their lunch outdoors, a picnic, which sounds like a wonderful idea. And it was very pleasant, until a horrific odor drifted into the clearing where they ate. Per the Folklore Society, Mary Ryan recalled, "We both wrinkled up our noses at the same time. I never smelled anything as bad in my life." As for Joan, she, quote, "suggested they were smelling a whole family of skunks, which should give you some idea how awful it was. But no army of black and white creatures appeared. Instead, what Mary described as, quote, a half ape, half man, emerged from the forest." Mary said, "I've been reading up on the abominable snowman since then, and from stories and articles, you get the idea that these things are more like gorillas. This thing was not like that at all. It had hair all over the body, as if it was an ape, yet the face was definitely human. It was more like a hairy human." And then Joan added that it made a little gurgling sound, like someone trying to whistle underwater. The women raced to their car and locked the doors. But in classic horror movie style, they realized, too late, that the keys were still sitting on the picnic blanket and that the creature stood in between them. And it seemed very interested in their Volkswagen, or perhaps in Mary and Joan inside the Volkswagen. According to the Folklore Society, the beast shambled over to the vehicle and, quote, caressed the hood. Then, in a terrifying show of understanding, it began to try the door handles. As for Joan and Mary, they panicked, as you might imagine. Joan said that her arm accidentally hit the car's horn, which seemed to startle the creature away, so she kept on honking. But it didn't frighten it away completely. Mary explained, "It stopped where we'd been eating, picked up my peanut butter sandwich, smelled it, and then devoured it in one gulp. It started to pick up Joan's purse and dropped it, and then it disappeared back into the woods." The women did report their experience to the Missouri State Patrol, but, well, you can guess how that went. They said it was probably a bear. It wasn't until 1972 that, in retrospect, Mary and Joan's insistence that they had definitely not encountered a bear was taken more seriously. So, what exactly happened in 1972? According to the Southern Illinoisan, the sightings began on July 12th with the children of a local family, the Harrisons. An important landmark, the hill where the Harrisons lived, has since changed names since the 1970s. We're going to use the contemporary version to avoid confusion. That family lived on the edge of a forest at what the paper described as, quote, the foot of Star Hill. And on that day, the two youngest children, Terry and Wally, were outside playing with their dog, Chubby. Their teenage sister Doris was inside doing some chores, but she was close to a window so that she could keep an eye on her brothers. According to the Illinoisan, that's when a creature broke through a clearing near the house. Doris remembered, "It was right by the tree, 6 or 7 feet tall, black and hair. It stood like a man, but it didn't look like one to me." Terry, started screaming, and according to the Columbia Missourian, he had good reason. The creature was carrying what appeared to be a dead dog. Not Chubby, as far as we know, so at least there's that. Doris recalled that Terry went as white as a sheet, so much so that she couldn't, quote, see his freckles, and that both boys ran for the house. For her part, Doris raced to the phone to call her parents. It wasn't a man, and it wasn't a bear, Doris told the Missourian. It was something. Something you'd never seen before? The reporter asked her. Exactly, she said. According to Lyle Blackburn's book, when Edgar Harrison, their father, arrived home, he immediately went in search of the creature. He did not encounter a monster, but he did find some odd clues. Quote, an area of flattened bush just about 50 feet from the house, and what he believed to be faint footprints in the dust with black hairs around them. When he asked his son Terry for more details about what the monster had been carrying, Terry said it was, quote, a dog with red stuff on it. But according to Lyle Blackburn, Edgar found absolutely no blood on the property, and under further questioning, Terry wasn't sure if he'd actually seen a dog. Maybe it had been something else entirely, something four-legged and covered in black hair, just like the creature. Edgar Harrison speculated whether it was, quote, in actuality, one of its offspring. According to Lyle Blackburn, that was not a comforting thought. After all, it meant there were multiple monsters in the woods.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm sure you've heard the old adage that you should learn something new every day. It's good advice, but with so much to do, are you making time to learn and stay curious about our world? Well, with Everything Everywhere Daily, you can easily make that goal a reality. Everything Everywhere Daily is one of the world's most popular daily education podcasts. In about 10 minutes, you can learn something new every day. The show covers history, science, geography, mathematics, and technology, as well as biographies from some of the world's most interesting people. One listener says the show truly makes my day more enjoyable and entertaining. Fans of the show are so passionate, they even work to join the Completionist Club, the group of dedicated listeners who've listened to all 900 plus and counting episodes. I highly recommend you check out Everything Everywhere Daily's recent episodes on Why Are There No Flying Cars? And The Little Ice Age That Happened 700 Years Ago. Learn something new every single day with Everything Everywhere Daily. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. The family continued to hear noises throughout the night. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, something like a, quote, gorilla, and Edgar Harrison became determined to catch whatever was on his land. Of course, they alerted the sheriff too, but Edgar went ahead and hung some fish from nearby trees, hoping to attract the monster, and he sat up at night with his hunting dog. As far as we can tell, though, that plan did not turn up much. How did the people in town take the Harrison story? According to the dispatch, some, quote, persons thought that the Harrison children saw a honey bear, forced down to town in search of water in the town Branch Creek, which runs close to the Harrison house. The weather had been hot and dry, but others, they believed them. Because, of course, theirs was only the first sighting of something bizarre in the little town. In fact, Edgar Harrison, he was a local preacher, and he held meetings at his property. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, parishioners had gathered there on July 14th, and they witnessed some of the strange goings-on for themselves. This time, it wasn't a beast at the edge of the property, but rather the appearance of strange, bright lights. According to the Missouri Folklore Society, They looked like, quote, fireballs soaring from over Star Hill and descending into the trees behind an abandoned school across the street. The objects appeared at 5-minute intervals. The first was white and the second green. The Society wrote that Harrison then reported a series of strange sounds. First, quote, ringing noises. He thought that it sounded like someone was throwing rocks against the reservoir that stood at the top of the hill. And then, quote, loud growling. It got louder and louder and kept coming closer. Harrison called local law enforcement, who looked around the home, but didn't see anything strange. So Harrison decided to expand the search himself. They walked the rural area until they found an abandoned building that absolutely stunk. Per the Society, Edgar Harrison said it smelled like, quote, a moldy horse smell or a strong garbage smell, but there was no creature in sight. However, another local, Pat Howard, he did see something. Quote, a dark object, walking like a man, crossing the road near the hill. According to Fox KTVI, it seems as though Star Hill was the epicenter of the Momo sightings that summer, though there were some outliers. The news channel reported that, quote, the police chief at the time, Shelby Ward, was called to investigate at Star Hill multiple times, and not only at the behest of the Harrison family. According to Lyle Blackburn, multiple reports came in over a few days. A Mrs. Clarence Lee reported, quote, a terrible growling animal. A farmer said that his dog was missing. Local boys out on Star Hill stumbled into the path of the creature itself. They swore they'd seen and smelled it, and they told police, quote, it resembled a bear. Then there was the local who saw, quote, a black, long-haired thing cross the highway, and another claimed something similar, except that the monster was clutching something in its jaws. Per Lyle Blackburn, there were plenty of reports of bad smells emanating from Star Hill too, so many that it's difficult to mark them all. We do imagine that police had a difficult time following up on reports of stinks, but they apparently tried. Based on Lyle Blackburn's research, Chief of Police Shelby Ward was not convinced that he had a monster on his hands, but he was certain that he had problems. This was backed up by reporting from the time. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Chief Ward was flooded with reports. Everything from dozens of sightings to the distressing news that Momo had, quote, picked up a sports car and hauled it into a ditch. He did organize several search parties, but we suspect that Chief Ward's primary concern were the errant hunters that had begun wandering in to Louisiana, Missouri. According to the dispatch, police had barricaded the hill, but that had not stopped locals and visitors from sneaking up to do their own Momo hunts. Ward told the paper, quote, people are going to go up on that hill with guns looking for this thing, and someone is going to get shot. A local farmer, Vic Meyer, agreed. He was a volunteer for the county rescue squad that was part of local law enforcement's organized search. He said that over 100 people had turned up to help, and every single one was armed. But that had been all police and rescue. It was organized. He could not imagine the chaos if people were just running around willy-nilly. But, well, he didn't have to imagine it, because as the Columbia, Missourian explained, quote, soon, Momo was a national phenomenon. News crews and other curiosity seekers found their way to Louisiana. A paper spoke to a resident that, quote, recalled seeing license plates from dozens of states. A bus brought in what he described as Sasquatch chasers from Oregon and Washington, where sightings are common. But despite all this excitement, and there was a lot of excitement, very little actual evidence turned up. Some black hair, a few footprint casts, crushed bushes, you dear strangers, you certainly know the drill. It was so little that many, both in town and abroad, declared the most obvious answers to the problem. They were dealing either with a bear or a hoax. Despite the monster sightings, the lack of evidence simply seemed to point that way. Well, most of it did. Except for one strange thing. Remember early on when we told you about that prayer meeting at the Harrison property just after their frightening sighting of the monster? If you'll recall, the second major event was not another creature encounter, but another kind of bizarre sight. strange, bright lights in the sky that seemed to drift down into a far-off field. Well, some of the other visitors to Louisiana, Missouri were much more interested in that phenomenon than the creature. Or maybe it's more correct to say that they were fascinated by these events in conjunction, the appearance of Momo and the lights. Because, and we assume you are connecting the dots here, UFOs. But let's get a little more specific. The dots aren't just connecting the bright lights and the UFOs, but also the appearance of the monster. Or maybe we should say, the alien. That would be a convenient reason for Momo to disappear, wouldn't it? Beamed right back up. No word on the July angle, though. Do aliens take vacations? In any case, the UFO enthusiasts who poured into Louisiana certainly seemed to consider the theory plausible. According to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Hayden C. Hughes of the International Unidentified Flying Object Bureau arrived from Oklahoma City, with his assistant in tow, to explore that possible connection. Hayden Hughes was not just an alien enthusiast. He had a degree in aeronautical and space engineering, and an intense interest in tracking possible UFO activity. Quote, Hughes said he had a small voluntary staff of assistants who work in cooperation with specialists at universities in the Midwest in trying to explain reports of monsters and UFOs. And Hughes claimed to the dispatch that they conducted a study that proved that, quote, about 80% of all sightings can be explained. We are interested in the other 20%. In terms of Momo, Hughes explained that the creature, quote, fits the pattern of one of three types of monsters that are usually reported to his staff. In Louisiana, Missouri, Hughes did not find the evidence that he wanted, but he did introduce a theory to the Momo conversation that has become more popular in Bigfoot and UFO circles, that the creatures might not be cryptids in the classical sense, but rather a kind of extraterrestrial. According to Mass Live, this theory picked up steam in paranormal research circles in the early 1970s, and it was certainly not limited to Hughes. Part of the theory comes from the fact that a number of Bigfoot sightings seem to be associated with orbs or lights, much like the ones that the Harrisons saw. But according to Mass Live, the point is that some believers are pondering whether, quote, the mysterious orbs are transporter beams for Sasquatch. And that could explain the pesky problem of why no one ever finds Bigfoot, dead or alive. Bigfoots go back to where they came from. Space, maybe. Or, depending on who you ask, another dimension. That's a whole different area of alien theory that deserves its own episode. Or maybe several. Now, are we saying that a very smelly Bigfoot-like creature appeared in Missouri each July via spaceship or maybe an alternate dimension? Well, no, because there are other theories. For instance, according to the Columbia Missourian, a retired teacher claims that the entire thing was pulled off by three of her former students as a lark. She told the paper that the boys fashioned a homemade monster suit they used only sporadically. They made the curious noises, planted the fake footprints, concocted the putrid smells. I don't think they planned for it to get as big as it did. They were just bored. They didn't have anything else to do. That teacher, she wouldn't give up any names, though, and she didn't offer any hard proof to back up her claims. Not that orbs and multidimensional portals are hard proof, but we do strive to present all sides. So we should mention, in that spirit, that a St. Joseph News Press article mentioned that a monster suit was found about 20 miles north of Louisiana in late July of 1972. But strangely, it wasn't anything hairy. Rather, it was made to look like a giant lizard with bulging eyes, which did not jibe with any of the Momo reports. And the sightings did continue after that. Still, it is an interesting little bump in the story, and it could account for some of the hysteria. So, strangers, what ultimately came of the whole Momo affair? Sightings trailed off around September of 1972, and they've been sporadic since then, but they have never died off completely. As it usually goes with these things, those who've had encounters remain steadfast in their belief. They saw what they saw. And the doubters, well, they continue to doubt. And as for the theories, as theories do, they proliferate. And we are, as always, open to hearing more, especially if you can actually explain to us how a multidimensional portal actually works, but only if you include illustrations. We here at One Strange Thing are very visual learners, which is unfortunate, really, when you have a podcast. We hope you'll join us next time for another real-life story from the fine print of America's local papers, from the lives of regular people, just like you and me, except for one strange thing. Strangers, I've released my first book, and it's available everywhere now as an audiobook, hardcover, and ebook. I read the audio version myself. It's called Lay Them to Rest, and it's about John and Jane Doe's, my years-long experience following forensic experts around the country, and our efforts to solve the mystery of a cold case. One Strange Thing is an independently produced podcast. To support the show and to hear more of the entirely true and enticingly peculiar, you now have three options to enjoy two extra bonus episodes a month. On Apple Premium and Supercast, you can get the bonus episodes delivered to your app of choice for just $2.99. For $2 more a month on Patreon, you'll get more fun extras. There you'll get ad-free releases of our regular episodes, two full-length bonus episodes, monthly giveaways, blog posts, and occasional live streams, all for $5. We hope you'll check out one of these options to support the show. There's a link in our show notes. And if you enjoy One Strange Thing, please take a moment to leave us a great rating or review on your favorite podcast app. It really helps.